I forget my lyrics. I start kicking the speakers. I'm thinking I bombed or whatever. I get off stage. She like, Dell, man, you killed them, Dell. They thought that was the craziest show ever. Like,
here it comes.
Here it comes.
You're listening to Fresh Era, a show about the legends from the golden era of hip hop. Each episode, we bring you stories from the pioneers themselves as we dive deep into their lives, their struggles, and what it was like to be a part of the most popular form of music before it was mainstream. I'm your host, Craig Smith. Now, there are many different genres that contribute to the sounds of hip-hop in the early 90s. There's everything from jazz to kung fu. And for a lot of black families who had moved from the South into other parts of the country, particularly the West Coast, the sound growing up was funk. Utilizing sounds from artists like George Clinton was a way to stand out. One artist that did this in a unique way was today's subject, Del the Funky Homo Sapien. He used all of his influences from George Clinton to cartoons, comedians to everyday life. All of this would go into creating one of the most unique MCs we've ever heard.
My name is Taron Delvon Jones.
And he was born in one of America's greatest cities, Oakland, California.
1972.
This was the year that the Oakland A's won the World Series and shocked the entire country.
Oakland has won the 1972 World Series.
And this was also a time where the Black Panther Party in Oakland was trying to solidify power.
He first organized the Black Panther Party for self-defense. He would say, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform.
This was in response to police brutality.
To contain the misery and violence of the ghetto, Oakland's all-white police department earned a reputation for head-knocking brutality.
And make no mistake, there was plenty of violence on the streets of Oakland.
There definitely was an element of the streets there. I just wasn't into it that much. I think I was in my own world, to tell you the truth.
His mom worked as a clerk for the Oakland Police Department, and his father worked in a manufacturing plant.
But it was paying some cool bread, I guess, so he was able to move me off of the flats in Oakland up to the hills in Oakland. Not hella far up in the hills, like just on the bottom rung of it, but high enough to keep me out of direct angle with the street, because I think that had to have been a concern with my parents.
His parents did the best they could to keep him in a safe and nurturing environment.
But I had a lot of free time on my hands because I was a latchkey kid.
A term that's fallen out of favor these days, but there's a whole generation of kids that knows exactly what it's like to be independent when they got out of school.
From like first grade, I was walking home from school. Like, I just was kind of advanced. So, like, if you showed me the route to the school and gave me a key, I could be responsible enough to get myself home and unlock the door and get in the house. So, like, my mom would be working all damn day or whatever.
And that would leave young Taron doing his own thing.
Sometimes I'd even go to school, to tell you the truth. Because, you know, like, all the Hanna-Barbera cartoons would start coming on. Because all the sick ones would come on, you know, when I had to go to school. Like, Touché, Tortoise. Pumpkin Push and Mush Mouse.
Now I wonder what Mush Mouse is hoo-hooing about.
Leia, I've been training for weeks and now I'm ready to take on that ornery Pumpkin Push.
Beyond Yogi Bear and Flintstone, beyond the Jetsons, I was like, ooh, this is raw. Like, this is next level.
And even when he wasn't skipping school and just coming home on his own, he still explored that sense of freedom.
What I would do is I'd go to the street and I'd go to the candy store, you know what I'm saying, trying to get like 300 pieces of Big Blows or some shit.
And between him and his younger brother, he got in a lot of trouble.
They was just hella on me, but I'd be doing hella shit too. Like, I'd just be doing dumb shit. I remember I had Silly Putty and my father, he had like pro photography shit, like pro cameras and shit. I found one of his cameras laying around and stuck Silly Putty all in the like lens part up here where you look to see, you know what I'm saying? Like, put it all where the film was at. I think he tried to kill me, like, literally. Like, I think my mother had to save me, actually. He was so mad.
But it wasn't his trouble that would bring most of the negativity in the home. Pretty young, he was watching his parents break up.
There's a lot of drama going on after a while, so I don't even really remember that much besides drama.
He was witnessing the demise of his parents' marriage.
Like, they separated when I was at a young age, so, like,
this was something that he understood for some reason, but his little brother didn't take it so well.
He was crying and shit. He was a baby, though, you know what I'm saying? But on top of that, he just didn't really get it.
And after some time passed, their home dynamic was completely different.
I damn near never seen my dad at that point. He tried to be around, but moms would be hating, talking shit about him, all kind of shit, you know what I'm saying?
And he was already a latchkey kid, but now he was in a one-parent home.
I was basically not not attended to a lot of the time.
And naturally, that had an effect on school.
So, you know, the teacher might wonder why I'm acting a certain way in school, but like if all this shit is happening at home, quite naturally, I'm not gonna be able to come to school prepared to fucking learn nothing or like sit at my desk still or none of this shit, you know what I'm saying? And you know, back then they would just be like, okay, stick them in the dumb head section.
Back then there wasn't a lot of emphasis on balance between home and school. And he was a pretty advanced kid. He was interested in cartoons, but he was also interested in things like computers.
So Pops, he would come through with shit like that. Cause he always kind of was like futuristic.
And it wasn't just technology, it was culture.
All that culture and shit I picked up from Pops. He used to have like art shows back in the like early 80s and shit, like abstract paintings. So like, that's where I get a lot of that from.
And his father's indulgence in arts and culture extended to music.
He stay up on shit. Reggae, jazz. He used to play a lot of jazz in the house. A lot of funk. Parliament Funkadelic probably left the biggest impression at first because it kind of scared me because they was just so to the left. This is a chance. I just was like, what is this? Like, probably like a lot of the U.S. And then, you know, later on, I peak like, okay, this is just super funk. So, like, I just start gravitating towards that because it just speak to my nature more. Like I said, I was addicted to cartoons. So anything that was like outrageous cartoon, like extreme, like with an exclamation point on the end of it, like I was into that. So when hip-hop came, it was just part of that.
As the 70s turned into the 80s, the remnants of funk were all around him. And it was hard to ignore this new thing that was happening.
All the cool kids, I guess you could say, or all the cools that was like on the block or in the street, they all listened to a certain type of music. And we just pretty much called it the beat. And it was pretty much derived off of funk. And at that point, funk had become hella more like synthesizers and like drum machines. So like you might get some shit where it's just damn near a drum machine and some vocals over it. And some Too Short thrown in for good measure because Too Short had like tapes he was selling on the block. So if you really knew somebody really hip, their older brother or something might have one of them Too Short tapes.
In the early 80s, between the legacy of funk and Too Short tapes, the seeds of musical storytelling were being deposited into his young brain. But looking back, even in the 80s, his father had something to do with that as well.
Like in the 70s, it was like a thing to like be having all these like social parties at your house and shit. That was cracking at my house a lot due to my father. Like,
so they would all get together and they would play comedy albums.
So the first rap to me probably would be like a Richard Pryor or Red Fox or a Dolemite. Actually was rapping over a beat.
Now Dolemite went on down to Kansas City, kicking asses till both shoes were shitty. Yeah.
Which to me, that's like rapping, you know what I'm saying? So it was just always some shit I should not have been listening to. But I knew it was real. I'd be around my father and his partners and how they really be talking, like when it ain't no white people around. It'd be certain little nigga shit that'd be happening, you know what I'm saying, that you'd never see on TV ever. So like, that's really what really intrigued me at first. And then hip hop kind of was like an addition to that.
He started hearing hip hop and it became evident that this was a way to express himself.
Like the average song might say like maybe like 7 words.
But when he started to hear MCs rocking the mic, he understood that there was a lot more that could be done. In contrast to genres like blues and jazz, he would hear MCs on the microphone delivering bar after bar.
Just every second, it's like, damn, okay, he said this, that was crazy, damn, that was crazy. Nothing else was like that except for somebody like a Richard Pryor or a Red Fox. That was the only thing close to somebody talking shit like that and getting away with it.
And that meant a lot to a kid who didn't see examples of himself represented in the media.
It was just everything that Prince wasn't. It was everything that Michael Jackson wasn't at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit was fake to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, why you gotta do all this and assimilate and do all this to be accepted? Like, and that ain't even really what we rocking. You know what I'm saying? The shit that we really rocking, it ain't getting seen like that. you know, nobody thought that the hip hop experience and shit was going to be shit.
But little did they know, hip hop was moving in for good. And eventually, West Coast hip hop would take off. West Coast artists like N.W.A. were about to make their mark in the hip hop game. And fortunately for Dell, he was in close proximity to an icon. Coming up, young Terrandell Von Jones becomes Dell the Funky Homo Sapien. And his career gets a jump start with help from his cousin, the one, the only, Ice Cube. Then later, he and some childhood friends start a legendary rap group, one that would inspire hip-hop from 93 till infinity. Stay tuned. This episode is brought to you by Little Giants Giant Shorties. I've got a few kids living in my house, and I can tell you, their energy is something you can't suppress. When it comes to expressing themselves, you've got to let them shine. They are the culture, so why not let them dress like it? Shopping WeAreLittleGiants.com gives you access to plenty of options for styling your little shorty with the same authenticity you reserve for yourself. Find t-shirts, hoodies, shoes, onesies, and much more. Honestly, you'll be jealous they don't have your size. WeAreLittleGiants.com has designs that speak to the love we've had for hip-hop since we were kids ourselves. You'll be passing along your passion for the culture when you see your little giant rocking this Most Definitely t-shirt I'm about to cop for my son, or this Notorious RBG hoodie for my daughter. Slide through. Literally slide down the spiral slide and land in their flagship store ball pit at 4675 Hollywood Boulevard. Peace.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back. Young Terrandell Von Jones was a kid from Oakland. And at this point in our story, it's the mid-80s. And his worldview was being shaped by his surroundings. Hanna-Barbera cartoons, funk artists like George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, comedians like Rudy Ray Moore, Red Fox, and Richard Pryor. And this was evident everywhere he went, including school. And school is where he would meet future Souls of Mischief members, A-Plus and Tajay.
I met A-Plus. Somebody was bullying him, like I think at the water fountain. And he was hella small, you know what I'm saying? So fools was like picking on him and shit, and like I'll just step to him like, why don't you leave him alone? And we just both was on some nerd shit, so like his father had computers at his house too, and he had like video games at his house too early on, where other kids probably didn't have shit like that. Plus knew Tajay on a different level because they kind of live close to each other.
And it wasn't long until this bond over technology turned into a bond over hip-hop.
Me and A Plus found out about Run DMC and probably lost our minds. And like, I think that from that point, I think me and him was trying to write little raps. And Tajay, too.
You can actually go hear Tajay's version of how it all came together for him and how he fell in love with hip-hop on his episode of Fresh Air that we did last season. But as for Dell, when he made this decision, he made the decision to go all in. But this wasn't like saying he wanted to be a lawyer. To the rest of the world, it sounded like he was headed for failure.
Niggas is telling me that my life was over. Like, why is you wasting your life doing all this hip-hop shit? Like, you don't never go to class. You just gonna be a failure. Like, what's your parents say, like, you ain't going to college, huh? You loser? Fools would actually be coming at me like that, like, but like, it was just a lifestyle. Like, if you was into that, that was the life, that was part of how you lived your life.
And a part of living your life in hip-hop meant he could be himself without compromising.
That was a way where I could be around these kids that I like to be around and not be having to, like, trying to pimp a bitch or trying to fucking sell no dope or trying to be the hardest gangster. Like, they respected it if you could rhyme. And then, you know, not get beat up and all this other shit.
He was finding acceptance in hip hop, and that acceptance wasn't just relegated to Oakland. He would actually take his love for hip hop all the way down to Los Angeles.
Like, most of my family transported from the South to Los Angeles. So, like, a lot of my family, especially on my mother's side, is in Los Angeles.
So every year he would take a trip down to LA to be with his cousins. One of those cousins was O'Shea Jackson, aka Ice Cube. And on his trips down to Los Angeles, he would bring his rhymes. And while his cousin Cube was off doing his own thing,
yeah, I'm fucking with bitches. You just leave me, like, at the house or whatever.
Dell was hanging out with the next-door neighbor, a future producing legend and cousin to Dr. Dre, Sir Jinx.
He was into the same shit I was into still. Like, he wasn't too grown for remote control cars and shit like that. And then from that, I'm just kicking it, talking to him, then find out he got a group called Busy Boy Productions. And, you know, he do shit with Cube or whatever. He, like, a major player.
And this is where things started to get really interesting when it came to his hip-hop journey.
He showed me everything about all the little hidden production tricks about hip-hop. That's when I start really making songs. I think Jinx just seen something in me.
And that something was obsession and work ethic.
I just wrote a lot. He had people that was down with him that they was dope too, but it just seemed like I would be producing way quicker and, like, just way more, like, gung-ho about it. Like, I was, like, into the shit. Like, for real, like, crazy about the shit.
And little did he know, he had already been preparing to learn this world of music production.
I already was fucking with computers. So, like, the SP-1200 was, like, a very basic computer, basically.
And even though he was locked in with Sir Jinx, when it came to his cousin Ice Cube, he had some convincing to do.
And I would attribute a lot of success to being around Cube, through proximity of being around Cube, just being around some real motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? There was even times where Cube kind of was like, he weird, you know what I'm saying? Like, whatever. And then they peep me, and they like, geez, you know what I'm saying? Like, no, he ain't weird. He cool, actually. He the partner, actually. They didn't have to worry about this other shit because I was just on some other shit.
For him, there was a lot of joy in creating music with Sir Jinx in L.A., and that joy was infectious. He would work as hard as he could, and before you know it,
we had a cool little demo put together, Mr. Lovable.
I'm Mr. Lovable. You know why? Because the girl says so. And when it comes to me,
duck season.
First, let me introduce myself. I'm DEO, the funky human being. When you see me in the function, I'm known to get extra crazy pungent. It's analyzed, the nerve endings in your brain. Cause I contain some metaphors for your force. And I can let them sink in as fast as I can take them. The international irrational was left to pass a little fool for thought. As I return excuses, reach into your medulla and I churn the juices like a blender.
And as time went on, he eventually graduated high school, and his main focus was becoming a rapper. And as the 80s began to wind down, he saw his cousin Ice Cube blow up.
Some of the greatest hits, he ran by me, like, you know, fuck the police. I remember him giving me that rap. What you think about this?
Fuck the police, coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad, cause I'm brown.
But as we all know, Ice Cube's tenure with N.W.A. ran out, leading Ice Cube to start his own thing. This included the Lynch Mob and a production company called Street Knowledge Productions. And Dell wanted to be a part of the fold.
Now, I had to pull his leg. Like, he was like, whatever, kid, you bother me. Like, I had to stay on him.
And with that, he would do whatever he needed to do, including write for another artist. And around 1990, Ice Cube and Street Knowledge Productions were working with a young, strong female MC called Yo-Yo. And Dell was ready to be a team player.
So Jinx working with Yo-Yo, I'm around.
And Dell had something that Sir Jinx really respected.
He dig when a motherfucker could get busy with the lyrics and shit. So he like, yo, Yo-Yo needs some of this too. And I'm sitting there, so like, for the experience or whatever, like, think you could write this?
Yo-Yo was born to wear a mic until it's worn. Like an old tennis shoe, a man that you not protect. If it's rare from a super, reaping the someone I'm reaping, I'm keeping.
And to be clear, he was co-writing with Yo-Yo. Together, they would come up with some ideas for the records.
I could put myself in that type of state of mind to write something for her. So, like, she was all about the intelligent black woman and all that, but she still was hood, though.
And over at Street Knowledge Productions, the priority was releasing a successful record with Yo-Yo. And on March 19th, 1991, they did just that. And fortunately, Dell already had music ready to go. And given his work on Yo-Yo's record, plus the proximity to Ice Cube, he was an attractive prospect to record labels.
Yeah, the bidding war came after Yo-Yo, and she was kind of successful with her shit. Cube is growing now. Okay, let's throw this motherfucker out now. And this my cousin, Woop the Woop.
And with that, they were able to start a bidding war over Del the Funky Homo Sapien off the strength of the success that Street Knowledge Productions had with Yo-Yo.
So I think Elektra was paying the most, but I think Elektra also, I think, was offering the best home for me.
And Elektra Records at the time was being run by Dante Ross.
Dante really from that cloth. Like, he do the graffiti. Probably was dancing too and don't want to admit it.
And all of this meant a whole lot to Del, who was really into hip hop and knew that he was going to need support in order to pull off what he had in mind.
It was like an honor for me to be on Elektra, and then for them to all be cool with me how they was, like, you know what I'm saying? Everybody was cool with me. Everybody helped me realize whatever vision I had artistically, even like, you know, with the logo, cover design, all that. They let me be a part of that. I'd be hard pressed to find another like hip hop a label that supported hip-hop more than Elektra.
So the plan was for them to work on his debut album. With Sir Jinx, he had already recorded a demo. But now with Street Knowledge Productions, he had the resources to actually go big. And in going big, he was going to do it right.
We ended up kind of building a theme around the funk and saving the funk.
And that was after a few ideas that weren't really going to work out.
I had a lot of shit that was on some other shit. So I think Q was like, nah, man, like, niggas ain't gonna like this. What do you mean? Like, this is jazz. Like, this is proven music through the ages. Like, what is you talking about? Like, to me, sound insane. I didn't get at that time what he's saying is, no, niggas is not gonna like this. Like, when the last time you heard somebody slapping some jazz down the street?
They might not have been slapping jazz, but they were definitely slapping funk. All of that Parliament Funkadelic and George Clinton made its mark. And not just on Del, but on the entire generation that was coming up in the West Coast. Saving the funk was something that was gonna translate. And it wouldn't be long until Del cemented his spot in hip-hop. Coming up, Del the Funky Homo Sapien releases his debut album. And in the process, he gets to work with his hero. He makes a splash with his single, Mr. Dabalina. Then, along with his childhood friends in the Bay, they create a hip-hop movement. We'll be right back.
Yo, what's the deal? You got the Black Sheep, D-R-E-S, yes. And I want y'all to know, right here, right now, stupid-fly.com is the place to be. Yo, you got hats, you got t-shirts, and all kind of flyness that you can get your hands on. Not only that, you can check out some of the flyest podcasts you've ever heard in your life. And that would be Stupid Fly Media on Instagram and Facebook. Why? Because they stupid fly, all right?
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Before the break, Taryn Del Von Jones became Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Hey, yo, Del.
What?
The fuck is a funky Homo Sapien?
It's a human being, fool. A funky human being.
Through his cousin Ice Cube's production company, he was creating his debut album. He was using all of his influences from the funk to inform the sound. But when it came to the title of the album, he resorted to childhood.
Liberace, a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
I wish my brother George was here.
I don't know, it's just stupid, right? But I was a huge fan of George Clinton, too. So Cube was like, hey, if I could get George Clinton to be on your shit, how would that be? I was like, you could get George Clinton?
He was Ice Cube. Of course he could get George Clinton. And he did. And George Clinton ended up contributing to a number of songs on the album, including Dr. Bombay.
Has anybody seen Del? Head swell, cause I get paid well, kick it much tail, drink me a 40 as I ride my rhinoceros. You don't like it? Well, you got the kiss, where the sun don't shine. Something like my behind, I lose a fan, but I'ma be fine.
I studied how he came up with Parliament versus like Funkadelic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really studied the funk hella hard.
But when it came to creating music, he would use whatever he got his hands on, including the sample for what would become his biggest single.
I grew up, I was a big fan of the Monkees, right?
Oh, and I saw her face.
Somehow I came across a record of their shit, like a real record. So it had some other ill shit on there, like shit that was like skits, I guess you could say. You know what I'm saying? So they had one called Zilch.
Zilch. Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina. Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina.
Zilch. China Clipper calling Alameda. China Clipper calling Alameda.
Zilch. China Clipper calling Alameda. Self-defense. China Clipper calling Alameda.
Like a game they was playing Zilch. Just like some fucking tongue twister shit. Just because I had the ability to loop some shit, I just wanted to loop some stupid shit just to see what it would sound like.
Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina. Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina.
Did that. It was like, okay. And then from there, it developed into a song about motherfuckers at school, basically, that just wasn't not hip to me.
Mr. Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina, Mr. Bob Davalina, won't you quit? You really make me sick with your fraudulent behavior. You're gonna make me flip and then an army couldn't save you. Why don't you behave, you little rugrat? Take a little tip from the tabloid, because I know I'm not paranoid.
But before they could call that song done, they had to get it in the hands of DJ Pooh.
Cube was good because he had that ear for the street. He had that street ear. Commercially, I think he knew what could work.
But Dell wasn't the typical commercial act, and it was going to take somebody else to see that.
Pooh be like, hey, Dell, man, that one shit you had, I like that shit, man. We about to do that shit, man. Fuck that shit.
And DJ Pooh was a producer that he could trust with his music.
When Pooh told me he produced Jack the Ripper... Jack the Ripper, King Hercules by LL. Like, dude, you produced that? I was like, you the man, dude.
So Dell had no problem giving Mr. Davalina over to DJ Pooh to see what he could do with it.
Pooh took that and then just filled it in.
Mr. Davalina.
I think I got a kind of personality that's childish, kind of. I just sampled that shit being stupid, just... It amused me in a childish way. It amused me enough to just make a song out of it.
In the summer of 1991, they released the single Sleeping on My Couch.
I had it up to here with these lazy cats, digging sleeping on my couch, and I'm tired of that.
Followed by the single Mr. Davalina.
Hell is already hip to your cronies. Me and CMP's thought about this, and never have we seen a brother who would hover like Mr. Davalina.
And in the fall of 1991, Dell the Funky Homo Sapiens' debut album, I Wish My Brother George Was Here, was released on Elektra Records. And the single, Mr. Davalina, hit the charts, peaking at number 6 on the U.S. Hot Rap Songs chart and making it all the way to Australia, Austria, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, and Sweden. And he got to commemorate this whole event with an album release party.
Funkmaster Flex DJ'd it. Bootsie Collins was in the house. Q-Tip was there. Cube was there. Jamalski was there.
And Jamalski came with the shenanigans.
So Jamalski roll up. I'm like, what's happening? He like, mushroom tea. I'm like, what you talking about? I got the mushroom tea.
He was talking about shrooms.
He let me get some of the mushroom tea, so I'm performing. I'm lit.
And this is where everything goes sideways.
I think I forget my lyrics. I start kicking the fucking speakers and shit. I'm on some punk rock shit, right?
This is his album release party, and as far as he knew, he had just fucked up.
I'm thinking I bombed or whatever. Layla Set the Run was doing my shit at the time, and they was like a big publicity firm at the time.
Dell gets off stage, and he runs straight into his publicist, and he's thinking that he just embarrassed everybody. She comes up.
Dell, man, you killed him, Dell. They thought that was the craziest show ever. Like, I think it reminded them of some, like, punk rock shit, like, for real.
And it was time to take this show on the road. In order to promote the album, he went out on tour.
It was Cube.
God damn, it's a brand new payback.
So that's WC. Coolio was on the road.
They're also on the road with a duo called Black Sheep.
You can get with this, or you can get with that.
And of course, Dell the Funky Homo Sapiens.
Everything's cool since the style of apparel you adopted. You used to make fun of, but now you wanna rock it.
This was his first time seeing the industry up close and personal. One moment, he was a kid from the Bay. And the next, he's on a tour bus going all around the country with a hit record. This lasted all throughout 1992. And as he was gearing up to record his second album, he had to come to terms with the fact that he wasn't going to be able to please everybody.
With the second album, I think it was like, I was confused. I got back to the town and my record was done, and like a lot of like purists was like lightweight clowning me, like, oh, you rapping over this G-Funk shitter.
And to make matters worse,
I ended up not even really getting paid nothing for my first record, but I still had taxes and all this shit, and I didn't know about none of that, so I ended up having to go bankrupt.
And he was still in the midst of recording his sophomore album, so amidst the criticism and everything else that he was going through, he decided to make a change.
So I think in rebellion of that, I'm gonna do everything I wanted to do on the first album.
The first album, he leaned into the funk, but he also gave the world a more commercial album than he wanted to create. But now, the walls were coming down around his creativity.
I rearranged my vocals in your headphones. I vote till I get an answer. Acknowledge and abolish all the whack records. Hieroglyphics, you know, respect it. Who caught the horn? You caught the form. If your friend, there's no need for a law.
And I was basically introducing the rest of Hieroglyphics too with that.
You know, fools know that my crew's so fat. If niggas try to jack, then I know they got my back. A plus must bust the one. Fed up with the wagons in this weak shit. So peep the style and learn how to freak shit. I hope ya learn how to cope. By the time you be this shit here, I'll be three times doper. Yeah.
Dell was reaching out to his friends back in the Bay. A-Plus and Tajay teamed up with Festo and Opio to create Souls of Mischief. They, along with Dell, Casual, and a few others, became known as Hieroglyphics.
So, like, I just felt like it was the perfect time, like, they coming out and they really repping that.
And at this time, while Dell is experimenting with the sound and reaching out to his homies back in the Bay, he's flying back and forth from the West Coast to New York to record his album.
When I was in New York, I really felt like energized, like, yeah, everything I'm talking about, motherfuckers get it. Whole way I'm moving, they get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that part was everything that I thought it would be.
And he was making some pretty important friends.
I got a lot of support from Sophia Chang. She just believed in my shit. Like, she worked for Jive Records, so she's not like she worked for Elektra, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I practically lived at her apartment. But I let her peep my shit. She's like, man, Dell, this shit is crazy. Like,
he had switched up the style of production from the first album. Instead of leaning so heavily on P-Funk influences, he decided to go a different direction. But when it came to his cousin Ice Cube,
I think he felt kind of bad at first. Like, man, I did what you wanted. You wanted George come in, I got him. Like, Rise of Funkenstein, I got him. Like, you wasn't complaining when we was doing it. Like,
nevertheless, Cube eventually came around. And ahead of the album's release, he was a part of the soundtrack to a big movie, Made in America, starring Whoopi Goldberg, Will Smith, and Ted Danson.
So I rapped about what Made in America meant to me, basically.
Made in America, where are you? Placed on the totem pole, I got soul. Cause I'm a black man, never sell a crack and attract the police. Facts are released, go straight through your ear to the mind.
In the fall of 1993, Dell the Funky Homo Sapien released his sophomore album, No Need for Alarm. It was a unique album that was special because it featured production and vocals from the Hieroglyphics. The album charted on Billboard 200, and it added to his legacy in hip-hop and especially to his legacy in Oakland.
It was just a community, like, the community, and then the community start growing around you. You know what I'm saying? I seen the hip hop community in Oakland like grow damn near around us. You know what I'm saying? So like I could see a trend of people doing the same shit we was doing.
But this kid from Oakland who spent a lot of his time watching cartoons and imagining a world where he could make his own mark, that kid went on to make it to the top. Then he brought his friends along with him.
It was like, you know, it was like an inspiration. Which was cool, actually, because I see a lot of people got to be they self and not have to trip, like, okay, I could be myself and I don't have to fit into whatever the hell you think is what I need to do to be cool or whatever. Like, I could just do my own thing.
Dell the Funky Homo Sapien has continued to release albums. And in 2001, he took a new generation by storm, collaborating with the band Gorillaz for their single Clint Eastwood.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing cause I'm counting no A's. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared.
These days, when you think about hip-hop, you think of the cool kids. You think of money and fame. But it's really interesting to sit and think about how it did not used to be that way. As you heard, people were telling Dell that he was throwing his life away by participating in hip-hop. Think about the type of obsession you have to have, the type of foresight, the willingness to be humiliated, but also the certainty that you were doing something worthwhile. There's so much pressure in our world to show up perfectly, to be somebody acceptable. But it's worth mentioning that as we look back at all the stories we've told on this show, most of the guys that got involved with hip-hop and literally paved the way for the cool kids took a lot of heat. This year, hip-hop turns 50. And as we celebrate hip-hop's golden year, our look back at the golden era has to be seen through honest lenses. To most of the world, this was not supposed to happen. And as we stand here 5 decades later, people like Dell the Funky Homo Sapien, Chubb Rock, Young MC, Grand Pooba, Mellow Man Ace, Kool Kim, and all of the other people that we've interacted with in this show and have yet to interact with deserve their spot in our Hall of Fame. Because it wasn't just that they stumbled across a new way to make music. It's that they found a way to express themselves when everybody called them weird, called them losers, and thought that they were just wasting their time. This one is for hip-hop, but it's also for the people who've been involved and the people who continue to show up as themselves to innovate. Fresh Era is a Stupid Fly production, written and edited by me, Craig Smith. Executive producer, DJ Cheap Shot. Chris Barnett got the mushroom tea. Sean Berman is our mix engineer. Music by The Math Club. Artwork by Ray Allen David. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Fresh Era Podcast. I'm on Instagram at I Am Craig Smith. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And don't be shy. Go to stupid-fly.com to pick up merchandise and stay up to date on what all we have going on. See you on the next episode of Fresh Era.